Once again, live podcasting at its best.
Yeah.
So, did I perform above expectations for you guys?
Oh, you certainly did.
You did not let us down whatsoever.
Alex has been here laughing this whole time.
The thing is, you try and be all humble. Doesn't. That's the thing. We know that you was just showing how big your Trek balls are. Oh, yeah. So, how are things your end, Mark?
Yeah, I'm okay. Okay. I see you're in control.
Yeah, I am now in control.
Why is Chris coming back on?
So in that case, Mark, go get some rest.
I shall. And I shall speak to you all. I'm back on at 8 o'clock, I believe.
Yes, you are.
I shall. That's with the First Contact live review. So really looking forward to that. Yes, looking forward to that. And Paul's on for then, isn't he?
He will be back for that, yeah. Paul will be back. So at this point, I'm now going to... See, this is what happens when we don't have a musical interlude. Everything sounds very messy. So I will now add our family members, JD and Fez.
And I will speak to you all very soon.
Yeah, see you soon.
See ya. Cheers.
Oh, no. Looks like they're not ready. So let's just get Chris and Greg on from the ready room. There we go. Now, any moment, they're probably going to say hi.
Hello, 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 hello.
Hello, Chris. Hi, Chris and Greg. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, glad to be here.
Sorry for overrunning.
How's it going?
We blame Technologic in
overrunning. You've clearly never been in the ready room.
Yeah, the other side of the room likes to go for about half an hour before we're supposed to actually start the actual show.
We could put out an entire other podcast with the others.
Honestly, me and Mark end up, even when it's just me and Mark, we end up recording about 9:30-ish, and we've been known to finish it just before 3.
Wow.
So, yeah, no, we can digress slightly, so I fully understand.
Yeah, when we have Larry Nemechek on, the podcast usually lasts about 8 or 9 hours, you'd say, Chris?
Yeah, that's right. The best bit.
Yeah, that's the thing. I love Larry, but you cannot stop him when he goes on. When he starts telling you a story, there's no stopping the man.
And you don't want to. It's the best story you've ever heard.
Oh, it's
and
all so gold.
You let him talk as much as he wants.
It's all gold, but then you're left just with this entire life story. And
exactly.
Yeah. But still. So, anybody who doesn't know Chris and Greg, what the hell are you doing? It's from the Ready Room from Trek FM.
Yes.
That's right.
Wonderful show. We have the Catan Master and the man who has single-handedly trademarked the phrase, sent you a DM.
There we go.
Today I saw new people giving me credit for that, and I really appreciate it, because if I'm going to get to the convention, I really do need to rake in those shards of platinum. Yeah, you don't think that up too much, but roll actually are worth quite a bit.
Residuals add up, yeah.
Right.
I'm still trying to copyright something, but nothing seems to stick as much as that sent you a DM.
Yeah, no, so... obviously, just a reminder, guys, it's been a little while since we mentioned, we're asking for your money for two very worthy charities, for the Amnesty International Fund and also for the Watford General Hospital Special Care Baby Unit. So if you're enjoying any of this Trek talk, then please head on over to justgiving.com/teams/TrekMakePodathon. And just give what you can. And whoever does donate the most by the end of the night will earn themselves a brand new iPad. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, we've had very generous donation by one of our co-hosts, Paul Drinkwater, who decides to foot the prizes for the event. So it's definitely nothing to sniffle at.
No, definitely not. And I'll say it since Mark is not here. Give us money.
Yeah, give us your money.
It's for the kids, right? So hand it over.
Yeah.
Even if it's not for the kids, there's some kids involved somewhere, so it's for the kids.
Yes.
Somewhere along the line.
Yes.
Oh, dear. So, guys, since you've made all the effort of barrel rolling over for us, we initially footed that we could possibly talk about like Star Trek and the difference between Gene's vision and how it actually has progressed when Star Trek isn't in the hands of the man himself.
Mm. Well, I think it's always good when stuff gets out of the hands of the man itself. I mean, look at what's happened to Star Wars over the years. George Lucas has had his iron grip over the franchise, and it's not gone well. But then you look at something like Battlestar Galactica, where Ron D. Moore took over, and the guy who created it's out of the picture. And it's such a better thing. And I think Star Trek sort of done the same thing with Gene slowly, you know, letting the ring go and passing it on to a new generation.
Absolutely. So say we all.
Do a barrel roll.
And because, to be honest, Gene really did lay down the groundwork in the sense of he created the ideals of the world.
Right.
But for me personally, and you see it especially within TNG as they were there for the first. Gene was mainly in control, like season one and season two, and then you could see the grip slowly moving.
Mm-hmm.
Away from Gene's hands, and the series, for me personally, just getting greater.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always said that, and I think I said this when I was on with Chris and Greg for their DS9 show, Gene Roddenberry was a genius world builder. There are good world builders, and then there are good writers. I think he was more of a good world builder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Especially coming to Next Generation, I feel like he really created this world that people were able to play in. So, I don't know, the original series was a little bit looser, a little bit more anything goes. But yeah, coming into TNG, he created the groundwork on which you could have DS9, even Enterprise and the you know, like First Contact. That's the sort of thing that only happens when you have somebody genius like Gene who set it all up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It really is. And with Gene's vision, it was a question of something that he laid down the morals that I think we can all aspire to. And the way that Gene, for me personally, he done brilliant when it was reflecting on, when the episodes were reflecting on issues within society.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's still something that's prevalent throughout all of Trek, and that is something that really did continue on.
Well, I'll tell you, so my take on it is that I think you said a moment ago that he established the ideal aspire toward. I think you all know from listening to the Ready Room that my favorite series is DS9, which kept a lot of flack, I think, for maybe getting away from Gene's ideals. But when you talk about really exploring society, exploring the social issues, I think DS9 series that actually was closest to that core principle of Star Trek, because it explored the reality of society in a way that sure we can connect with it and we can know what the characters are experiencing more so than The Next Generation, which I love as well. But Next Generation, I mean, these are people that are too perfect that there is sometimes a disconnect between the audience and the message, I think.
Right. No, I've always used the term, especially for like first and second season TNG, the crew are amateur philosophers in a sense.
Hmm.
they seem to have a pretty good grasp on life that I don't think anyone in their, whether they're supposed to be in their mid to late 40s, would normally have. I think you're right, though, Chris. I think that, well, TOS and TNG were more about exploring how other societies could be improved by humanity or with humanity's interactions with them. DS9 was more of a focus inward and really looked at us as a society and as a species in this new 24th century world.
Right. No, I mean, just because you're living in the future doesn't mean you've internalized every last bit of, you know, of the advancement of humanity. You're still a human being. You're still going to make mistakes. You're still going to be able to understand, you know, stuff like I just watched Angel One, Riker just spouting off, philosophical dissertation. No, that's not going to happen. He's going to be figuring out for himself, like, is this working? Like, what do I think about it? And yeah, that's where DS9 comes in and says, these are actual people. They don't know exactly what to think about the situation.
Right. And I think also with TNG, it's not just the idea of here is how humanity in their evolved form can help other societies. It's the framework of that future that we see in TNG is that we as humanity have overcome all of our ills, but we're not going to actually talk about how we overcame those ills. Simply that in the future we are much better, and thus we should all be much better now. And I think that what is really important is the exploration of how you get from point A to point B, not just simply that you're at point B now.
Mm. No, and it's one of those things where it's like, I know Gene's original vision was that we would get over all of our differences and learn how to work together, but at the same time, I'm glad that a show like DS9 still shows that we can have conflicts between us, because I still don't, even though I like to believe in Gene Roddenberry's philosophy and in his vision, I still don't think that we're going to eradicate all conflict among ourselves in 200 years.
Yeah. And I think where Voyager went wrong is it sort of threw both sides of it out the window, and it was all about taking the tech. It's like, oh, here's this new science problem. How is B'Elanna going to overcome it? And it really ignored, you know, it wasn't TNG or DS9. It did its own thing where it wasn't really Star Trek. And I think that's where the real hardcore fans have a problem with it. As much as it looks cool and there's interesting storylines, it's not dealing with humanity. And I think that's what Trek fans really want to see, at least from my perspective.
I think the bigger disappointment for that, Greg, is that Voyager was set up so perfectly. I mean, you had two crews who did not get along, had different philosophies, but they were going to have to learn how to work together in order to get home. That central premise could have been so dramatically interesting had they utilized it to its full potential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, as you said, I don't think if the series had remained solely in Gene's hands, we would never have got the legacy that is Star Trek now. Almost franchised out is what made Star Trek what it is today. And it's certainly the Star Trek that I grew to love far more than having ever had, seen the odd episode of TOS. That would never have gripped me for too long.
Absolutely. And I think even if Gene had been able to make Phase 2 in the 70s, I think it might have lasted a season or two and people might have forgotten about Star Trek. The fact that it got pulled away from him with the movies, he couldn't control the movies, and then with Next Gen, he was getting older and had to let go of the reins. I think that actually helped Star Trek's chances of really cementing itself in the public consciousness.
I'll tell you, my life journey with this, I grew up with TOS, and so I was in high school when TNG came around. So all I knew for a long time was TOS. It's really, really connected me for a long time, because when I was in my teens, and even, you know, say when I was university age, I really aspired this vision of the future that we see where everything has been solved. That's where I thought, oh, we're going to get there. We're really going to get there. This is the future I want. And it really connected with me. But as I got experience, I realized that, you know, this isn't really how the world works. And although it's a noble vision of the future, It's also not a very realistic one, certainly not on the time frame that we're given in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And early, especially one, it still feels very TOS. It still has this very kind of, the world is black and white, and the lack of conflict makes for very poor drama. And so I think it's good that the franchise did move on into the hands of other people who could explore. And you see in TNG that things kind of loosen up a bit as you go along towards the end of the series. And then DS9 definitely takes it, runs with it. And even Enterprise, I think, does a good job of showing how we would really feel if we were suddenly thrown out into the universe.
Yeah, one thing I love about Enterprise was what they did to the Vulcans. I know a lot of people, my parents, longtime Trekkies, hate what Enterprise did with the Vulcans. But showing them as an earlier society where they're still dealing with it and they're dealing with this young culture that's trying to get out there before it's ready, it's really, really fascinating. And it's the sort of, whenever they do one of those episodes about the Vulcans on Enterprise, that's when I feel like they're really doing DS9-level storytelling.
The thing is, though, when fans do complain about how the Vulcans are portrayed, because they're so used to the Vulcans that we have in TOS and TNG, but they're more willing to accept how the humans are because they can relate to them more. Mm-hmm. I think that's a bit unfair to say that a society wouldn't have progressed over a couple of hundred years.
Yeah. I mean, look at us. Let's look at humanity, us right now in the 21st century versus how we were at the beginning of the 19th century. We still had slaves, you know. There wasn't equal rights for people. So who's to say that an alien society wouldn't be radically different 200 years ago than they were as you knew them in the present day?
I think who says in 300 years men won't be wearing dresses?
Yes.
Well, we have to go through the scant phase first, and.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you've got nuclear war, you've got eugenics, you've got various stages. The scant phase is one of the darkest phases of as a civilization progresses.
Even more darker than the Dominion War.
Yeah, the scant.
Definitely.
Just.
Well, the thing I think. No, go for it.
If you cannot accept that the Vulcans of the 22nd century. Different from those of the 23rd or the 24th century, I think you're missing part of the point of Star Trek in the first place.
Yeah.
Things happen within societies. I mean, 100 years is a long time. 200 years is a long time. You know, I mean, you look at society today, just 10 years goes by. And especially if you are removed from a culture and you go back into that culture after 10 or 15 years, things are different. And clearly, over hundreds of years, things would be could possibly be almost unrecognizable to you.
That's exactly what you were saying earlier, Chris, about how this is the Vulcans going back and being portrayed that way. We actually get to see how they get from point A to point B.
But then also, what I enjoyed seeing is it, for me, the entire series could be encapsulated with Archer, because you really see him going from being us, from being the guy that was so angry at the Vulcans for holding back his father's warp technology, for like ship design, for like just having a chip on his shoulder regarding Vulcans and having his own set way, to morally he becomes more like the Federation captain that become the norm in the future. It's what his learning process.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And he's even, we see in a future timeline, he's sleeping with one of them in Twilight, he's with one of the Vulcans. So he's obviously progressed quite a deal from where he was in Broken Bow.
Yeah, definitely. But that is a progression I'm sure that we could all achieve fairly quickly.
Sure, if Jolene Blaylock was your first officer.
Exactly.
I don't know what he'd be into if he has a rubber mask on first so he can see through.
Oh dear. So, but personally, I just feel that without the influence that other people gave, it's just a question of we would never have got here. Because is Deep Space Nine both of your favorite series?
Mine.
Oh, well, I know it's yours.
I definitely say it would be my favorite, just considering where it goes with the serialized nature of it. But, I mean, the end of TNG is hot on its heels. There's some Enterprise that's excellent. But just as far as look at the Dominion War, I don't think TV gets better than that.
Mm-mm. No.
Dominion War is excellent.
Let's even, like, it's not even DS9 that probably wouldn't have happened. Let's go back to the beginning. Star Trek 2 probably would not have happened if they hadn't kicked Gene Roddenberry up into the executive consultant position.
Yep. Yeah, because that was a totally different flavor from the motion picture.
Yeah,
right. And is what really changed the franchise as well. I mean, that there's such a marked difference between TOS and the motion picture versus the Wrath of Khan and everything that came after.
Mm.
Yeah. But you can see all the way back to, you know, Gene made The Cage, which they didn't really like, but they said, look, Gene's got something going on here. Let's let him make another pilot. And then, you know, 20 years later, let Gene make the motion picture. Ah, it's not really what we're looking for, but let's make another one of these. They never killed Star Trek. Because I think they saw that there was something in Star Trek that people were connecting with. And they just had to get the right people with the right influences to make it perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm assuming from earlier comments that neither of you are that keen on Voyager.
Series. And the thing about it is... I don't know if I've seen this on the show. I've written it before. There are lots of individual Voyager episodes that I like very much. There may, in fact, be more individual Voyager episodes that I like than there are DS9 episodes on an episode-by-episode basis. Mm. Just episode interesting, something about it. And the series, overall, not wild Voyager, partially because I feel like the writers completely missed the opportunity they had. And the writing is just all over the place. It's consistent. And like Greg said earlier, they just go too far into teching the tech to the point where, you know, what I want is stories about people. I don't want stories that have a technological solution to them. If the characters aren't rich and they don't interact well, I walk away with something to think about after the story, then quite connect with me in the way that I want to. So it's not that I don't love Voyager, but as a series, it lacks a few things for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's the show that I grew up with, so I have a deep connection to the characters. Stuff like the episode where B'Elanna gets split into her Vulcan, or sorry, her Klingon and her human side. Really, that's amazing. But yeah, they spend a lot of time just doing silly time travel junk, and it just, ugh, I don't like it. But no, I don't have a problem with it. I still recommend that people anybody skip the series.
That's the thing. I just wonder if it's also partly to do with Voyager took a step back to that episodic sort of feel rather than what we came to expect from Deep Space Nine.
Really noisy there. Okay. And it was like an attempt to return to the formula of the original series,
mm-hmm.
I believe. Even with Janeway and her kind of quasi-cowboy diplomacy attitude. You know how she likes to quote Kirk on the show? You know, she'll be in her ready room and Coco will walk in and she'll say...
Coco.
Like, just looking at the Starfleet databanks and this is what Captain James T. Kirk had to say. And then she'll go into some long thing. And then Coco will say, well, you know, what I think we should do is this and this and this and this and this. And then she'll say, well, you know, I really don't give a damn what you think. I'm just going to do whatever.
That's nice you think that, Coco. Now let Kathy take care of it. Go back to the bridge.
Come back to 11.
But I think sometimes the problem with Voyager was just that Jerry Taylor seemed to almost be so stuck on making sure that the female presence within Voyager was like the only crew members that really were made to look good. The guys were normally like not just like the underlings, but the females were the ones that pulled it all out of the bag.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with Janeway as a female captain.
She's my favorite captain.
The writers needed to figure out what they were going to do with her instead of having her sometimes be this Picard-like figure. And then sometimes she's the Kirk-like figure. And then sometimes she's, I don't know, she's the Keiko figure. I don't. She's like the mom. I don't know. It's just, it was just very inconsistent. And I wish that she had not slept through that class at Starfleet Academy where they teach you that space is three-dimensional. Scorpion, where they decide they might have to turn back because they can't go through the stream of...
Like, yes.
I can't go under them. I can't, you know, alter my course a bit. We can only fly directly through this stream. So we might have to just go back and, you know, settle on another planet.
Well, not only that, like, the caretaker's wave is right behind us. Let's go up. We cannot run it. Let's go up.
Yeah. So.
And also, I love Janeway, but she had some weird taste in holodeck programs.
Oh, God.
Whoever wants to like dream about being a nanny.
Yes, if a governess program is your idea of relaxing, you really haven't had a social life, sweetie.
I'm telling you, it's just you didn't see on camera. You know, it wasn't that she was going to be a nanny for those kids. That was actually a program that she and Chakotay had together, but never saw them in there at the same time.
So did Coco then portray one of the children? He had mummy issues.
Yeah.
Oh man, you know, God, it's bad when you're talking about Janeway's holodeck programs.
Yeah, I know you've addressed it quite a few times in the Dowse Quadrant.
Yes, and I can't wait to get to Fairhaven.
Yes.
Oh God. Yeah. Oh well. You know, we're not even talking about Fairhaven sometimes, and Char will go there.
Of course she will.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I was just wondering before Greg dropped off. Is Greg and Char's cross project going to be getting published on the main Trek FM site for?
Yeah, you mean the Janeway Rain Robinson / fic that they're working on?
That's the one. Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
I think we might publish it as part of our After Dark label.
Yes.
We'll talk about it. Beyond the Other Side of the Room, which is yet another show that we hypothetically may put together at some point.
Yeah. The Other Side of the Room.
I have to get Larry to say Beyond the Other Side of the Room.
That's the thing. In a podcaster's mind, there's always more shows to be made. Just not enough time.
Exactly.
So what is have you got any big plans going on at the moment over at Trek FM?
I don't know. We're just doing the same stuff as usual. I'm hoping to get... Okay, hold on one second here. Yeah, we're just trying to get MatterStream going again regularly, for one thing. Schedule's been kind of tight, you know, over the course of the summer and all, so it's been a bit spot. Hoping to get that. Of course, the Ready Room continue to move along, and hoping to get more feature articles out there, you know, beyond the podcasts. So, and and of course, we just want to loop everyone else in for more discussion as well.
Yeah,
of course.
No, definitely. And obviously, with Decade now fully in run, you're really catering to the STO market as well now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was something that I had been wanting to do for quite a while. And but you know, I have a ship in STO, but I really am not able to play very often, both for time reasons and because Cryptic will not make a native Mac client for it. And I just don't feel like booting my computer into Windows and being unable to do anything else just to play STO. So I don't have the knowledge, but you know, Colin was so deep into STO and so knowledgeable about it. And so I was glad that he was interested in putting together a show with us. And of course, Tom being on there now as well has just been great. And I'm amazed that those guys can be so knowledgeable about Star Trek itself and so knowledgeable about Star Trek Online at the same time. I think they truly live and breathe Star Trek, no doubt.
Oh, they really do. That's the thing. I just wish that they had started doing Decade before I started my half-assed attempt at playing for STO. Would save me so much time.
It is good for new. You know, we're trying to have a mix of information for new players and information for veteran players, and so I think they're doing a good job of providing that guidance for new players and also letting veterans know what's happening in the game. You know, having the devs on and people up to date on it.
Oh, one thing that I did want to say, I love the cover art that you provided for Larry's interview CD that you put together.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no, I thought it was works really well.
Yeah, that was a fun project. It was really very interesting to me as Larry and I were working on I don't want to say remastering because we still have some work to do on them, but at least taking those interviews that are all on cassette tape and which are aging and trying to get the audio to a point where it was a little bit easier to listen to because, you know, there's a lot of noise on audio cassettes. And anyway, during that process, as we were working on that, it was very interesting just to listen to the interviews. You know, some of them, I mean, the Mark Leonard interview goes back to 86, I believe. And, you know, hearing that, hearing people talk about TNG back in the 90s, it's amazing now. It's like, you know, with Netflix, with the DVDs and everything, the way we look at Star Trek is with such hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, and, you know, I mean, I went through all of it myself firsthand. I saw it all, except for TOS, which I was a little kid when it was starting in reruns. But everything else, you know, I've watched it be developed and I followed it all the way through. But still now, kind of my vision of Star Trek is colored by the fact that I have instant access to everything all the time. And sometimes you forget, even as a creative myself, you kind of forget the creative process that went into it. And so these interviews are great, you know, and hopefully we'll be able to get more of them out because there are a lot of them. And it's some really great insight into Star Trek that Larry's able to provide that, you know, has never been heard by people before, and therefore it has never been transcribed onto Memory Alpha.
Mm-hmm. And also what excites me about that project more as well is when I was speaking to Larry, he very much turned around and said that because it wasn't a formal interview of types, it's almost like a podcast before podcasts. So yeah. I'm just looking forward to hearing hearing the CD that he's got out there. He just needs to figure out international shipping first.
I know. I've told him we need to do it as a digital download, so we'll see. That may be an option down the road at some point. I can't say right now, but it's something, you know, hopefully these days. I mean, you don't get the great packaging, but it's easier. Trust me, you know, like you guys, you know, I live in Tokyo, so I'm in the same boat as you guys are, if not...
I would say slightly worse.
You guys are used to getting everything. It's like, I just finally yesterday completed my like 3-week attempt to get my hands on Doctor Who. It's like, I finally found, we finally got Hulu in Japan recently, and they finally started adding things. And I finally discovered that, Hulu, they actually have some BBC programming on there. They do have Doctor Who. It's 980 yen per month. Great, because otherwise I couldn't find it anywhere. Jeez. So yeah, I digital distribution is the way to go for sure.
Yeah, and that's the thing. To be honest, it costs so little on their part to provide it that way. Yet the it's all virtually all profits. So. It's definitely the way forward for the future.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't. I do buy DVDs, but I put them in the computer. I like to have the physical discs, but I don't actually want to stick them in the player every time I want to watch something. And then for music, I mean, I haven't bought a CD in 10 years, I don't know. Actually, that's scary.
But I think that's the buying the DVDs still. I think it's bred into most Star Trek fans that collector's mentality. Because I still like to have the physical item in front of me before actually ripping it onto the DVD, so that then you can take it on your iPad.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. And also I want the extra features, you know, especially with Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, anything like that. It's, without the special features, yeah, you know, I can always find a way to just see the episodes. So I definitely want to collect those.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, Chris, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time out to join us.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for inviting.
And we really appreciate all of the help that you and Greg have done to promote the event as we pod till we drop around the clock. So I did grab it as a catchphrase after it was suggested by Greg. It's in one of our sound bites.
Okay. Well, Greg wanted me to tell you thank you for having him on as well. He is running around tonight, and he was able to call in from where he is, but he had a hard out and I think a connection issue as well. So he kind of just suddenly dropped out there. So sorry about that.
Don't worry. These things happen. These things happen. And trust me, we understand just as much. We're all in the same boat, us podcasters.
Can't believe you guys are staying up. Now I take it. What is it there? It's
now 3:45 in the morning.
You guys started at 8, so clearly you haven't been drinking the whole time, or else.
No, one of our hosts had been drinking, but he was signing off at midday.
Yeah, I wonder who that could be.
There's only one culprit. So.
For me here, so when we do the ready room, for me it's always morning, and it's nighttime for everyone else. So they get to drink, but I can't. And you see what I have to deal with at the end of the shows, right?
Oh, Char with a bottle of Bailey's is a dangerous, dangerous thing.
Definitely.
A little bit,
but still. So obviously. Everyone can find you guys at trek.fm.
That's right. Yep. And that is the URL. I notice a lot of people search Google for trekfm.com, but it's actually trek.fm. That's the URL. So you can find us there. And you can find everything else we do once you get there. We have, you know, as we've talked about here, we have the Ready Room, which is our big discussion show. We have MatterStream, which is my interview show, which is somewhat infrequent, but we talk about issues surrounding Star Trek. We don't actually talk about episodes and all. So it's, you know, science, philosophy, religion, creative, all sorts of things like that. We have Deck 8, the STO show you talked about. We've got Hyper Channel, it's a video news show with international sex symbol Tristan Riddell hosting.
Absolutely.
And all of our feature articles, most of them we do as audio as well in the Captain's Log podcast. So we got all kinds of stuff. So just go to trek.fm and you'll find that there. Find us in iTunes, on Stitcher, and of course on Facebook, facebook.com/trekfm, and on Twitter, Trek FM. And there are actually four of us who tweet from the Trek FM account. So wherever you are in the world, there should be something going on pretty much all the time. It's Greg, myself, Charlene, and Drew. We're all tweeting from there. We try to sign stuff with our initials most of the time, so you know who it is. If it's racy, it's Char.
Yes. And if it's a song lyric, it's probably you.
I keep those personal account, so. Personal account is C. Brian Jones. It's Brian with a Y, if anyone wants to find me there. And Greg's is Greg Harbin. It's Greg with one G, and Harbin, H-A-R-B-I-N.
Brilliant.
So I just want to say, I just wanted to say, as a fan and someone who follows Trek FM and all the work that you guys do, I want to thank you for putting out the amazing work product that you do from week to week. It's just incredible to watch. So congratulations on that, Chris.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's good to hear. You know, I mean, we do it because we love Star Trek, but it's definitely good to hear that it's appreciated and enjoyed by others. So thank you, guys.
You're more than welcome. So thank you for joining us again, Chris.
My pleasure. Well, good luck with the rest of the Podtuya Dropathon. I hope you won't drop until you get to the very end. And I hope that everyone can donate, and it's a great success. And we'll continue to try to push people over there for the next few hours. You got quite a while to go, actually, don't you?
That's the thing. We're coming near to the halfway mark. We're approaching an hour eight, so we've still got a way to go. So,
well, I'm looking forward to the rest of the show.
Thank
for sure.
You very much. Well, have a safe barrel roll home.
I will my way to lunch right now.
See you later, Chris.
I see you later. Right.
So that was Trek FM with us there. And seeing as we've spoken a lot about Larry Nemeczek, earlier in the week, we did actually catch up with Larry, and he spent a little bit of time with us and gave us a couple of short interviews. So I think that'll be a good segue to our first interview with Larry. So let's pop on over and see what happened. Yes, so we've been joined by our good friend Larry Nemeczek. Hey, Larry.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going great, and thanks for having me in on this. I mean, I'm pretty exhausted because I've been up, you know, 9 hours myself, but I think this podathon is a good thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's I'm pretty sure that it's going to be one of the most exasperating 24 hours. It's certainly going to push Talking Trek to its limits.
Well, this is what they do when they don't give us a damn weekly show. They make us come up with stuff to fill in all that spare time, you know?
Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. There was a time when we were running around trying to, you know, keep up with the color of the shoelaces of the second assistant prop person. And all that time is opened up now. So, you know, power to you and congratulations again.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. So obviously, one thing that I do want to touch on straight away is how did the Geek Tours go?
The Geek Tours. Yeah, our Geek Nation Tours. Terrace's company's in Canada, in Alberta. And it was a blast. It wound up being a pilot, kind of a shakedown cruise. We didn't have a huge group. We had a great group. We had a small group. We had about about 10 people, which was great because we were fine-tuning as we went. And they all had a blast. Everybody shared their pictures. And, of course, we rolled from L.A. up into the for here a couple of days and around in town, Hollywood, and then outer greater L.A., and then up to Lone Pine up in the mountains. We crossed deserts. We crossed mountains. And into Las Vegas for the convention. And by the time the pictures were shared and we were showing off our bowling shirts, Terrace was great, and he got everybody that went a bowling shirt that said Geek Nation Tours Hollywood to Vegas Trek Film Sites with Larry Nemechek, which was great marketing. And by the time all that happened, we had a great buzz at Vegas, and he has a ton of people lined up wanting to do whatever it is we do next year, and if we may do more than one. So it was a great time, and I saw things I hadn't seen before. It was, you know, went to some of the old things here in town, but by the time we got up to Lone Pine and we were in the mountains and the deserts, and we went from, you know, Shakari to Hainan 4 to Paradise City and all that. It was great.
Did you manage to find Kirk's shack from the Nexus?
We did. We had to deal with some special. It was funny because we went back and forth from the Trek world to the real world, and that's why the shakedown was kind of interesting that way. It was the same thing with a lot of the other things we dealt with. And the further out of town we got, the more it was interesting. But we overcame everything. So
that's kind of cool. Hi, Larry, it's Adam here. So where about is Kirk Shack located?
It's at the top.
That's like a good question.
I guess if I say the Nexus, that won't do, huh?
No, it won't.
Oh, okay. His imagination.
To me, it looks like it could be the set of a porn film.
That's actually right. People say it was in Whitney Portal up by Lone Pine, but it was really right here in Van Nuys in the valley.
No, okay. I've been to Van Nuys. It was an interesting experience.
We actually had to deal with some visitation issues around the cabin, but I can tell you that it's up just outside of Lone Pine, a very scenic area. Lone Pine is on the back side of the Sierras. On the front side of the Sierras, you go up to Yosemite and you go to Sequoia National Park, and it's the side that leads into the Central Valley. And the back side is the side of the Sierras that faces toward Nevada. On the California side, we're almost at Nevada. So you're going up, if you want to go up, so it's like Bishop and Lone Pine and up that way. It's on the Death Valley side of the Sierras, but it's not. And you're right on the dividing line between the dry forest mountains, and then you're out into the desert. And that's why the place where, in Ascent, where Quark and Odo climbed the mountain, which I don't think the planet ever got a name, but if it did, I'm sure somebody will jump in and say, okay, he's on the planet. Yeah, it's on one of those planets. But the place where Odo and Quark went up the mountain is about as the crow flies, not as you drive on a road, but as the crow flies, it's about 2 or 3 miles from where Voyager's crew was stranded in the Basics. So those are two very different terrains.
Oh, okay.
But that's the kind of incredibleness that we, you know, got to see.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing about America, is you go from one state to another, and you've got a completely different terrain and weather.
Well, you are when you're in some places. Now, if you're back home in my native Oki land, you can drive and drive and drive. And actually, that's not true. There's lakes and there's rolling hills, and then there's a little bit more rolling hills, and there's a little bit flatter hills.
Yeah, I mean, I remember driving from California to Nevada, and it's just you've got some beautiful lush landscape, and suddenly you're in a desert with sort of sandstorms going on the side of the road.
It's almost enough to make you think why they don't come into the movies here, because all the scenery is so easy to get to. Oh, yeah. Wait, they did. Yeah. About 100 years ago, yeah.
Brilliant stuff.
Here's our last little travelogue bit. Just don't do what all the Brits and Germans and everyone else who comes over. They land in L.A. and people I've met at conventions, and we say, sure, we'll help you get around a little bit. And they come and they say, okay, well, I want to go to the Grand Canyon tomorrow, and then I want to go to Yosemite the day after that, and then I want to go to Glacier Park, and then I'd like to come. It's like, guys, you still have to get 6 or 7 or 8 hours. It's not like driving up to Portland or something, you know. It's
I lived in L.A. in 2010, so I've got a rough idea of the train there.
There you go.
Quite familiar. But, yeah, it's I'm always impressed by the sheer size of America.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the size of some American egos is almost as bad, but there you go.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but I'm glad you're the one that dropped that bomb.
Well, I just lived through 2 weeks of the political conventions, and thankfully they happened in the – not to get political, but they happened in the order they happened, so I'm glad at least it happened that way. So anyway, but on with the show, Wayne. People don't want to hear us talk about – you know.
No, this is also – that's the thing. People love digressions. So it's all good.
This is one of many.
That's the thing. And
I think, Wayne, you did neglect to introduce the rest of the listeners that Michael and I are on, actually.
Yes, of course.
Do you want to do that now?
Yeah, by all means. Yes, everybody. We're also being joined by Adam and Michael. Though I'm sure I'll manage to introduce that before I play the clip as well.
Yeah, clever editing. Maybe.
Of them.
How was VegasCon? Because obviously there was tons going on, being TNG's 25th anniversary this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did I hope everybody can go over to Treklandblog.com. I did a review about it, but it's really been interesting. This is the second year at the Rio, and if anyone in your audience has been able to come to Vegas, for years it was at the Hilton because that's where the experience was. And they carried on, and I say, you know, this whole Vegas convention thing only got started in 2001. It took people 3 or 4 years to realize that, oh, gee, the experience is here. Maybe we should link in a big convention to it. Because Creation's Grand Slam had been kind of the biggest American convention, although other people may have hit and missed or hit and made it, over, you know, off and on. But it wasn't until 2001, and Dave Scott and his Slanted Fedora did one for the whatever the anniversary was that year. It would have been 45th? No, 35th. And then next year, Creation jumped that and went to August and did it ever since. And they did a couple years, you know, at the Hilton without the experience to see what it was like, and people still gathered down at the Space Quest, which was the closest bar to where the experience used to be. But they jumped to the Rio, which is has no Trek connection other than that's now the host, and it was different location, more of a regular, vibrant casino, but a very budget-minded one. They advertise that all their rooms are suites, and it's a much huger place. So last year it took everyone a lot more walking time, and I don't care whether you were one of the actor guests or staff or fans or a dealer or guest or whatever you were, everybody just ran about 10-15 minutes behind, just getting used. It's almost like having to get acclimated to a new climate, This year, people seemed to be over that. Everybody was braced for the fact that the vendor's room was going to be, far away from the – not far away, but further away from the main room, from the side room, and from your own room, and from any place to eat at or any place to go get a drink. So just that – talk about hopping around between the American national parks. That's kind of what it felt like inside of the Rio. But given that, it was actually – in one way, I said last year felt like the Comic-Conification of Vegas because there was an explosion in costumes. And I mean that. I mean the ones with a sense of humor, the ones that were out of the box. And if you go on site, you could see tons of those last year and this year both. There was a ton more of that, and there was a ton more this year also. The little secondary room used to be kind of the orphan. And I really think since JJ's movie came out that we've had so many new people come in. And we've, not been data, hadn't been surveys, but just word of mouth. And people, person after person I ran into since 2009 and 2010, and I see what's happened in the secondary room. It's always got 150, 200 people. There's a whole generation of fans that come in now and don't know they're supposed to spend the whole weekend standing in line somewhere or maybe watching the main stage. So that's been interesting, and that just totally ramped up this year, and a lot of licensees, with StarTrek.com kind of more back and vibrant, had a lot more licensees there presenting. So if last year was the Comic-Conification of Vegas in a costume way, it was that way this way with the panel. And we had, and again, we hadn't even got to your point about it being the TNG reunion year, 25th anniversary. That was a huge thing. They had four of the five captains. Patrick was stolen away by a little thing I think you all were throwing, a little party you had called the Olympics.
And
And so that was, you know, that's kind of my two basic giveaways. It really, it's the same, but it's really evolving in a lot of really cute ways, interesting ways. And I swear to God, I had tons more people come up to my table still. And if I got talking to them, say, it was not just their first, you know, it was their first Vegas convention, or it was their first convention of any kind, which blows me away. So it's really thriving. And I was going to say, I was told, Gary told me that they were down about 10% from last year in just in numbers for two reasons. One, last year was Leonard Nimoy's last convention, and they think that was a huge spike for that. So this is kind of back on a normal number.
Yeah.
And but you wouldn't know it from the enthusiasm and the excitement. Mm-hmm. And people knew that JJ's movie is coming next year. But it's really Netflix and the internet and people doing stuff on their own. We were laughing about, you know, your podcast empire now.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's something that really has kicked off the whole. We don't have that as much over here, but over in the States, the whole having all of Star Trek at the touch of a button with Netflix has just really inspired a new generation of fans to discover the whole franchise.
Yeah, and I just went through my entire blog post. There's no reason to go read it now, obviously, but yeah.
I'm just worried that new fans will start with TOS in season one or two of Next Generation and give up.
Well, we've all got a crusade on that, huh?
Mm. Yeah, that's the thing. We've just got to entice people to the right places.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love all Star Trek, but I just think that people who haven't seen it before won't be willing to forgive some of that sort of the poor effects or things like that. Obviously, when you get into season three of TNG, it gets amazing. So I worry that people think, oh, this is a bit ropey, I'm not sure about some of these things, and give up to it just what gets good.
Well, see, you're giving your when you say that people are going to back out over the poor effects, you're showing your generation there, because that was what TNG, even first season, was supposed to have over the original series. Mm. But now, that was, oh, okay. You know, now you can say maybe not bad effects, maybe static would be a better.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember watching TNG when it was on TV, and I loved it, and the effects didn't bother me, but I've tried to get other friends into Star Trek, and I'd be like, no, watch it. Forgive the slightly strange fish monster eating out of the barrel. And they're like, oh, no, I don't like it. And I'm like, no, it's good. Forget about that. It's about the plot and the characters.
Now, are you talking about people who are sci-fi fans to begin with? Or are you talking about people, you know, just off the street?
Well, I don't just invite strangers into my house and ask them to watch Star Trek with me.
Well, I mean, metaphorically or whatever. Are you talking about your friend?
Yeah, no.
I'm already sci-fi oriented. But
I've got sci-fi friends who like it, but I've also got a friend. Maybe it was my mistake of watching with a few girlfriends, and they're just like, well, Adam, what are you watching? This is dreadful.
Are you telling me the geek girl revolution hasn't got to the UK yet?
It has. I just need to find one.
No, I think with the late episode.
Because I do invite people just off the street into my house to watch Star Trek. But anyway.
No, I've heard about your your room parties of screenings. They're legendary.
If she's attractive enough, I'll ask her to my house to watch Star Trek. But they normally say no. That's the problem.
Oh, okay.
But you know, you've got to keep trying.
Yeah. The Trekkie girls need to do a couple of chapters on that for their male watching.
The only thing is with the female viewers is, I think if you're trying to get a girlfriend into Trek, you're probably best off starting with Deep Space Nine.
Yes, absolutely.
Really? Okay. I mean, I'm not doubting you. I hadn't thought of it.
Actually, no. The women like Voyager. They like the strong female role, and it's very much a female empowered show.
True, but I think with Deep Space Nine, it's got that where it's not episodic, it's a story arc. Mm. Women love soap operas, and
good point.
They like something that progresses and would encourage them to keep watching.
Well, then I guess you better start them with third or fourth season DS9 then, huh?
I was starting with Way of the Warrior.
Yeah, exactly. Start with season 4 onwards. I mean, I think 1-3 of DS9 has got some great episodes, but for me, Way of the Warrior is where DS9 really begins.
Oh, definitely. Because for me, it's almost the second beginning of Deep Space Nine, because you really do, you progress. Worf is your eyes, and you're just learning, because that was pretty much my jump-on point with DS9, and it was so agreeable, just because it was so familiar to have Worf there, and to be shown through the whole thing, and it was like a second pilot.
Where were you guys in 1996 when they could have used you in the publicity mail? I mean,
I was out buying the videos and watching it religiously, waiting for the next to come out.
Oh yeah,
and I was buying Star Trek Backcast not when they came out, but I had them. Which I think you were involved in those, weren't you, Larry?
Oh yeah, I was there from like day T-1, so yeah, all the way through. I have my house today because of the fact files, so, yeah.
So in some way I paid for your house.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Exactly. So if you want to come in and wear a shirt that says, "Hi, I'm just off the street," I'll have you come into it.
Come in, just to see what my money bought.
As long as you have your official credentials, like, you know, a shirt that proclaims it or something, that you're off the street.
I suppose we could produce a shirt with a picture of the fact files on the back and on the front, I bought Larry's house.
Yeah. You can say, I'm a member of Binder of Number 47 or something, you know.
Yeah.
So, Larry,
yes.
You mentioned earlier about JJ and the impact in Vegas. There was a lot more people there because of it. What's your opinion of the 2009 film, and do you think it's had a positive impact on Star Trek?
I do, and my opinion has evolved only because I think I'm a human being that's been around Star Trek for 25 years. I know people, you know, I was relieved when I realized, this is complicated. I'm trying to cover all bases at once or all in one breath. Watching it unravel. I mean, I hate the drip. I hate being in a movie era, for one thing, because movies are treated so much differently than TV series. And movies are, when it comes right down to it, and I kept trying to tell people this, and it finally soaked in, that, you know, a movie, when all is said and done, a movie is 2 hours of film stuff for you to watch. And when it's done, you're going to have to wait 2 or 3 or 4 years for another 2 hours. So it's, you know, it won't satisfy like a TV show, and it doesn't do the same things and all that. But given that, it was interesting to watch the evolution of the rumor mill, and, you know, JJ and Bad Robot are notorious about their secrecy. People thought Berman and the Trek machine used to be, you know, secretive and hold everything in. They set an all-time bar with the movie, and then you'd get the little drips and drabs come out, a little drip by drip, which I hated for Trek journalism for the two, but that's kind of what we were stuck with. And as it kind of eventually, all the rumors of, the canon this and canon that, and they're blowing up canon, and it's a and it was kind of like, well, you know, I can't do anything about it. People love to sound off, but I'm gonna try to, you know, I love in the franchise, I hope I don't have to go out and sell shoes too quickly, you know. And then when it came out that the Supreme Court, more or less, had the five different personalities, and when you find out that Bob Orsi and Alex Kurtzman, especially Bob Orsi, are dyed-in-the-wool fans, you have a lot of hope that they're going to do something not stupid. And then you have Brian Burke, who's not a fan, but he's kind of the control group of the group. And JJ is a storyteller and a visual storyteller, and he lives in the 21st century. And when you have that mix, and Damon Lindelof in there too, and when you have that mix, you realize that no one guy is going to get his way. JJ is the Supreme Court justice, I guess. Mm. And as it evolved out and we got the idea that, okay, well, they're going to do this. They want the liberation of telling stories now. Whether you agree with it or not, thinking that 737 hours of aired Star Trek as a canon, you know, which has some internal things of its own, but mostly tries to hang together, when that's viewed as a mantle, you know, as a liability, as a stone around your neck, then that you kind of go, whoa, well, if you're going to answer that concern by saying we're going to go, you know, we're going to reboot, we're going to reimagine, then you go, oh. Because for a lot of people, that's what the appeal of Star Trek is. We love the characters, we love the plots, we love the morality plays. But one of the legs on that three-legged stool of or four-legged stool of Star Trek popularity is the fact that Gene and Dorothy and Gene Kuhn and Bob Justman and all those guys cared about continuity. You can read their memos in the making of Star Trek, and that's one of the first things that infused me was, oh my God, they. As a fan, that's what got to me first. It wasn't, ooh, Spock is so sexy, or ooh, Kirk is so sexy, or whatever. It was, and the gadgets are cool, yeah, but it was, oh my God, they tried to make all this fit together. They tried to make a world that you wanted to climb through your TV and go right in there, and it would all be there, you know. And I really thought it was a mistake of, you know, they used to say the Enterprise itself is the ninth character, or whatever, the eighth character. So, much less what lied beyond. I was always saying, well, what lies, to, you know, to hell with the Enterprise, what lies beyond the Enterprise? This is cool. I wanted to go see the Federation Council working. I wanted to go see some of the other home planets. I wanted to go to Teller Prime for years. So,
well, that's the thing. You want, that's what always it got me as well. You wanted to see the entire world, like the backstory. Yeah. That's why the episodes like Lower Deck, I really enjoy. Mm.
Yeah. And there's a difference between that and being a canonista, that as I lovingly call them. Because I'm a canonista myself, mm-hmm. but it's not just about being anal about continuity. It's just the fact that they cared enough to do it. So I got off on a soapbox there. But my thing was, I hope they were smart enough not to blow that up. When they came up with the conceit of an alternate timeline, then it was like, okay, fine, all bets are off. The other 45 years will last just fine.
Yeah,
I may care or not care about your little alternate timeline here. It's the same thing as the Klingon War and Nestor's Enterprise. It's the same thing as the Mirror Universe. It's an alternate timeline. Yeah. And the fact they called Spock Prime, was whether
that makes
sense
like
or not.
A Transformer.
Sorry?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Like a Transformer. Yeah. Spock Prime.
So back to your question. It took a while. The only thing that left me squeamish was the one thing I had not heard about was the whole Spock Uhura thing. And it was just a visceral reaction, but then it was an alternate universe. And I started thinking, well, who was the only person we ever saw play Spock's Vulcan Lyre, you know, Vulcan Lyrette? Who was the only person that, you know, kind of quasi tried to flirt with him in the first few episodes? It was her. So it's an alternate universe, and go with that. But the yes, to answer your other question, I mean, I'm excited to see what they do. I loved the casting of the movie. I thought it was great. I love Simon Pegg, but he was the only one I was kind of going, hmm. For his person, but of course he pulls it off. And the new movie, I knew the new movie would be tougher than the first one in a way mm-hmm. that Wrath of Khan was tougher in a lot of ways than motion picture. You know, yeah. I can see a parallel there. But bottom line is, yeah, I was a believer when I walked in that secondary room, and instead of 12 people, there were 300 people in August of 2009. And so many people were new. And the evil secret master plan of Paramount CBS was that I'm kidding, of course, but that all those people weren't just bubblegum summertime movie watchers. They all did go over, a chunk of them went over to start watching the original series and Next Gen and absorbing that. Because the Roddenberry, you know, whatever budget or era of special effect or whatever you use, the core of Star Trek still is the Roddenberry vision and the Roddenberry thing. And that somehow, that pulled them in. You know, J.J.'s movie got criticized for not everything else it did right. The one thing it might have been lacking on, and Bob Orsi told me this himself, was that the Roddenberry heart may not have been there. They were so busy hopping through hoops of plot, you know. But it does underlie everything, and maybe they'll try to get into that a little more with the second one, hopefully.
And actually,
but that's what – that pulls enough people over to have them go through and get indoctrinated, you know, without a big movement. So, yeah, the movie's been great for that, and I can't wait to see it. To do the next one. I still want a weekly series, and I want to go back to Prime.
And I'll tell you what, that actually...
I think... Sorry, Wayne.
No, I was just going to say, that brings on a great question that I'm actually going to ask you.
I'm going to ask a question, I'll take over.
That can wait until our next section.
Ah!
So hang on, guys. Larry will be back very soon.